Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life Podcast. My guest on today's episode is Keith Utendorf, and Keith is the boys' basketball coach at Otterville High School in Putnam County, Ohio. As a Putnam County native, Keith grew up in the area and has now coached at both Fort Jennings High School and Otterville High School, two of the small school rivals in Putnam County. That's just a part of the interesting journey that's led Keith Utendorf into high school coaching. Please enjoy my conversation today with Otterville High School head boys' basketball coach Keith Utendorf. Coach Utendorf, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your willingness to sit down and chat with me. This has been a long time in the making. You and I started chatting about this, I think, at the state tournament in Dayton a couple of years back, and I wasn't sure if this thing was going to get going again. I've been really pleased by the response, and seems like it's not quite like it was in the pandemic. I can't get everybody to book and say yes, but most people are, so I just want to tell you thanks for agreeing to do it, and I'm looking forward to telling your story.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to, hopefully offering something of value. But, I can't tell you how good these things have been. And like I told you off air, I've listened to a bunch of them all the way back in 2020. And still yet the last few here in this second rendition of this. It's been awesome, my man. I do appreciate you having me on. And I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Well, again, I just appreciate it. We'll try to be respectful of your time and keep it as close to an hour as we can, but usually the story dictates how long it lasts. So if it's good, it's hard to squeeze it into an hour.
Yeah, and you know me, sometimes I go on. I start talking and I don't stop. So hopefully, I'll be respectful of your time too.
You're about the third or fourth guest in a row that said, hey, I can get going pretty good. So if you need to rein me in, just do it. And I just want to tell the story. So I am familiar with your background. You're the head basketball coach at Otterville High School. For some of our listeners, that'll be, you know, common knowledge. For some of our listeners, if it's unlikely that they may know everything about your story. So I just want to get into your background. Every episode starts with, talk to me about where you grew up, where you went to high school, what your playing career was like, and really, I guess, when it was that you started thinking about the coaching thing as possibly a full-time deal for your life.
Yeah, so I was a graduate of Ottawa Glandorf OG High School, and played basketball and football in high school during a pretty special era in kind of Titan football and Titan basketball. I did some other stuff throughout the way. I ran a couple years of track and didn't really find my place. But I don't know, growing up in Ottawa and Glandorf, it's a pretty special town, as probably many of our listeners would probably attest to, both athletically and academically and socially. Above all else, it's a place where people are welcomed, and I certainly felt the love and the togetherness that this community always provides. So I ended up coming back, and now my wife and my family and I live here again, and we're happy as you could imagine to be back here, to live here and allow our kids to feel the same thing as they kind of begin to grow up. But you know, I mean, I guess from an early age, junior high and then into high school, I guess one of the biggest things that I had a lot of people influence me here. We talked about what a special place this is. And first and foremost, I think my parents, my dad, my mom, are two of the best role models that I could have ever asked for. And my mom was a teacher, so I guess my uncle was a superintendent at OG for a long time, an administrator at several other districts before he came back home and did that before he retired. So I've been around education, and I've been around sports and athletics here at OG, and obviously the area in general, my whole life, and the teaching profession as well. I didn't know that that's what I really wanted to do right off the bat. I had some other thoughts and about how I wanted to go about my life and what I wanted to do. But education and teaching and in the end, coaching, as well, I'm sure we'll get into a little bit more later, that was always kind of there and something that I really respected, but also kind of an admired and just kind of had in my periphery. So, you know, John, one of the things I guess I talk about, and so my family was a huge influence on me. The coaches that I'll kind of bring up as far as who coached me back in high school, especially in junior high years here at OG. They were huge influences. My friends were my biggest influence. And I tell our kids, both in class and our players, you are who you surround yourself with. And so who you surround yourself with is who you're more likely to be a product of. And so I guess some of the biggest people that I have to be thankful for are some of the friends that I grew up with all the way from kindergarten through college, and now still today when we all have families and stuff. They're still huge influences. And honestly, my friends were better versions of who I really aspired to be, because I wanted to live by that philosophy that you are who you surround yourself with. So surround yourself with better people than yourself. I mean, my friends now are biomedical engineers, computer engineers, structural engineers, administrators in school districts, priests, college coaches, like some of my core group that we'll actually get together here later this fall and get all of our families back together. We've done that several times. They were all better versions of who I wanted to be. So, and sometimes they had to keep me accountable to that standard that we kind of had as a group of friends. But that's the special part, I guess, about being where I'm from, and to develop those things, those relationships. That's a huge thing that we talk about in coaching and education and teaching in general, is just the relationships and how powerful those are. And that all started, I guess, long story short, here where I grew up in Ottawa Glendorf. So it's a special place to me, always will be. Obviously, you mentioned Ottaville now. It's a special place at Fort Jennings, and Van Wert is where I've been before, and we'll get into that later, I'm sure. But they're all special places that have great people, and I'm just happy to be kind of around them and kind of live with them in this place and kind of grow up.
Well, Keith, when you talk about that community connection that you had at Ottawa and Glendorf, and obviously it exists in Ottaville, Fort Jennings, you know, the places you've been before. You and I are both Northwest Ohio guys. A lot of our listeners are going to be Northwest Ohio people, but a lot of our listeners won't be. And there is a common thread, you know, whether we're talking about Putnam County, Shelby County, there are just communities around Northwest, West Central Ohio, where the work ethic is fairly well known, where the community pride is incredibly sharp. But it's also fair to say that it's highly competitive in those communities. And so when you become committed to an athletic career, you've got to reach a certain standard to be a part of that. And it's not easy for everybody. And in fact, it's not for everybody. When you surround yourself with the friend group that you talked about and you get motivated to pursue those things, were there hurdles, were there obstacles, were there times when the things that you say, as you put it, that being the person that you wanted to be was more challenging?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can tell you a couple of stories, I guess, about me. And like you said, it's highly competitive. I forgot Lipsick. I coached at Lipsick, too. And those are some of my little brothers yet today that I'll probably talk about, too. And that's another community that just, it's in the same region. This place is special. And honestly, when I was growing up, I mean, the competitive nature, when you talk about playing at OG, I played football from 2002 to 2005, you know, freshman year to senior year. During that time, we won our first WBL title in football. So to be part of that was pretty special. The basketball during that time, I don't know how much, you know, some of your listeners are going to know, but when you talk about OG from 2002 to 2005, there's three regional finals appearances, two of which were against LeBron James at Toledo. The third one was when we finally beat them my junior year. And then obviously my fourth year when I was a senior was honestly one of the not as successful seasons. We'll just put it that way. When you talk about, you know, Titan basketball and what it's been. But I mean, when we had that stretch, it was an unbelievable place to be a part of. It demanded the competitiveness every single day in every single sport, in the classroom and everywhere else. Because if you weren't ready to, literally we talked about in the culture that we had, it's the next guy up. And honestly, my friends kind of helped me to that standard. And I didn't meet that standard so many times in high school, very often, to be honest. So, you know, one of the times, I'll be honest, so like part of my story and one of the ways that I really kind of ended up navigating to coaching and being a part of athletics and education, when I finally decided to hone in and do that, at OG, we won a state championship in 2004 in basketball, first ever. It was a special, special group. I was not part of that group. As I told you, I played basketball from 2002 to 2005 during like Todd Shoemaker back in the day. If some of our listeners remember, those were like my heroes. Those were like the seniors when I was a freshman. Eric Sweet, Matt Laudick, Kurt Croy, like those guys, they were so good. It was unbelievable. Tim and Eric Pollitz were great friends of mine that went on to play at Miami. They were a year older than us. We were the seniors that won that state championship along with that class and some of the guys from my class that were juniors and a couple of sophomores. But, like, it was a really special time, but I wasn't part of that. I'll be honest, I was a knucklehead in high school to what we had just talked about. And Coach Sweet, I made the final cut couple of days before Thanksgiving, I think, and we were rolling out the first game, and I was last cut. And the only real reason I know, and I know this, I think, for a fact, because I had started in the summer on that team, was maybe a sixth or seventh man at minimum. I wasn't that good, but I was a good role player, I thought, for what that group was. But I just had an attitude that I didn't really want to corral. And it started in football that year. Coach Schreiner, who I respect immensely, Ken Schreiner, has been a coach for 25 years for Titan football and still coaching today. I saw it there. I couldn't really handle it in football that season, and it carried over into basketball, and I ended up not being a part of that. And it was probably one of the more transformational experiences that I've ever went through in my life. It was probably one of the hardest things, not me. But at that point, I can tell you it was the hardest thing because I knew what that team had and I knew what I wanted and I wanted to be a part of it, but I just didn't do what was expected of me to end up being a part of that. So that was one of the more transformational things from my youth, I think, that kind of changed me and started to set me straight. And I came back out as a senior and made the team, tried to correct some things. And I did for the most part. I wasn't completely devoid of stupidity at times, but they allowed me to grow up a little bit, and I ended up starting most of the year, played a lot as a senior, and at least had the experience, and I knew what the value of being a part of that program was and how it created better men coming out of it, and so I guess I hope I'm one of the byproducts of that, but that was it's still today. You can tell probably in my conversations it's still hard
absolutely
to think about that, but those are the messages I think that get sent, and they can change people for the worse or for the better, and I hope that I guess I chose a better path after that to sort of be a resource for people now in our profession. To be able to tell them my own experiences, I guess.
Well, Coach, and I really have any recollection of when you and I met. Feels like I've just always known you. But I don't know everything about your story, and I had no idea about that part of your journey. But what jumps out at me is that having gone through that, it would create what I think is an opportunity to look back on that time and say two things. Number one, my mistakes were on me. Number two, when I go back and try to fix those things the following year and those coaches welcome me back into a part of that, there's something to be learned there. But really the third thing that that kind of jumps out to me is you would not have maybe known it at the time, but as you progress toward a career in coaching, you've got an opportunity now based on what you've lived through as a part of your life to have a different level of empathy, I think, maybe for players. And it has to be a helpful thing to have experience when you relate to kids from whatever their circumstance might be.
Yeah, for sure. I that's one of the things that I hope that I took out of that was to be that resource and to show that empathy. When we have kids that have struggled with different things outside of maybe social situations or otherwise, I guess I can be somewhat of a resource for them to explain what I went through, explain how you can kind of take the road that you're probably meant for. But yeah, you're right. It's something that I've tried to use in some situations that have come up through coaching with some of our players and stuff, and to be that person to lean on if they need it. So, because I sure did. And those coaches that were in that program, you know, like Scott Magg, who I ended up coaching for at Lipsick, which I know we'll talk about, John Turbin, who is now my administrator and boss at Otterville, Dave Sweet, who was the coach at the time and one of the most successful Hall of Fame coaches ever. I mean, they allowed me to grow. And so to be reflective on that and to allow kids that I see now that may need that same sort of growth, and I can at least hopefully recognize it and give them the chances to grow, and the students that we see in class to give them the chance to grow because of maybe a little bit of experience in that situation.
So you get through high school. You said 2005 was your senior year. I love to ask this question because I think the answer can be so varied. When did you formulate the idea of what your next steps were going to be, whether or not that included coaching? When did you start to have a pretty good idea of what you were going to be beginning in 2006, you know, that very first year out of high school? When did your plan for a future and a career start to develop for you?
You know, honestly, probably the day that I was cut, that was the first moment where I said I was going to coach. somehow, some way. Now, probably at that point, I think it was probably more of a sense of, I don't want to say bitterness, but I wanted, because of that competitiveness that we talked about, I wanted for someone to maybe give me the one more chance. And they ended up doing that. But in that moment, I thought, I'm going to do this, and I think this is what I want to do. Now, I wasn't really sure when I went to college that that was exactly it. I love pre-law. I love sports. I love sports since I saw Joe Montana and Marcus Allen in Kansas City and fell in love with the Chiefs. So now, you know, there's a bunch of different connections that have come up from that. And I've garnered some of my best friends who you are obviously connected with Aaron and stuff. That's been a connection piece for later in my life too. But I love sports all my life. I wanted to be a sports agent. I wanted to be on ESPN. I wanted to do color. I wanted to do a bunch of things at different points in time and stay connected with sports. I think that's the driving force between finally choosing a profession. But I also, as I told you, my mom has been my greatest influence on my life. And so when she was in education, I was in her classroom all the time. And you can see the growth and you can see the connection and relationships with kids. So I knew kind of probably a year or two into college when I flip-flopped from pre-law and communication and journalism. The other thing with that, when they decided that I had to take 2 years of Spanish – in the first class in college, when I had never taken Spanish in high school, the teacher was speaking completely in Spanish, I said that I probably can't do this. So that was another driving force, to be honest with you. But yeah, education was always there. And I think by that year two of college, I kind of knew that direction and finally found it. And then I was honestly just afforded an opportunity. Coincidentally, when I had that decision, when Scott Magg became the head coach, my JV coach at Ottawa Glandorf became the new head coach at Lipsick going into my junior year. And he gave me an opportunity. So at that time, it was just to be a freshman coach. And then by the end of the summer, Alex Hanna, who was originally going to be the varsity assistant, it was going to be an entirely OG staff, right? Scott Magg, Alex Hanna, graduated, I think, in 99 or 2000. Chris Kuhlman, who's one of my best friends still today, graduated in 2001. And then me as the freshman coach, it was going to be the four of us. I was the original sort of staff. And then Alex ended up getting the athletic director job at Lufton High School. So he kind of left and did that. And so Scott, by the time the fall rolled around, decided to bump me up to the varsity assistant job. So at 20 years old, here I am with an opportunity to start kind of coaching and start creating those relationships with our players and education. So
my first question almost always is when a guy gets into that first coaching opportunity, and for whatever it's worth, there's a remarkable level of similarity, maybe for different reasons, but certainly on the surface. I grew up small town, grew up on a farm, knew I didn't want a farm. Still to this day, can't imagine that was the right decision in terms of trying to honor my dad and his legacy and all the work that he put in. But got cut from my high school team a couple of times. And when I went to college, I thought maybe law school might be in my future down the road as well. Ultimately ended up knowing I was going to coach. But I know when I went to college, I went with the intent of joining a college program as a student manager, as a student assistant, and letting that be my learning ground. You went the high school coaching route at the age of 20, but I always like to ask this question, particularly when I know where a guy's background is. So you mentioned Dave Sweet, you mentioned Ken Schreiner, your football coach, and then you're going to go to work for Scott Magg. In that first opportunity at 20 years of age, did you find yourself reflecting on the things that those coaches had taught you, or did you find yourself saying, I got to figure this out for myself, and maybe it wasn't as much their direct influence as it was more that they just kind of pushed you along the path? I'm always curious to know what guys' mindsets are like when they first get started in this whole, what we call this, I think it's a crazy profession, but I love it.
John, I disappointed my dad also when you mentioned farming. I also grew up on a farm, disappointed my dad being the oldest child that I never wanted to work on the farm ever. So much to his chagrin, I did not choose the same thing either. But I think for me, honestly, with the coaching thing, I was 20 and I knew what I wanted, and I knew what I was taught, and the culture and the accountability and the competitiveness that I kind of came from. I didn't know what I was doing, to be honest with you. It was probably a great position to be in, to learn from Scott, also to kind of learn from Chris a little bit, who was the JV coach. So I honestly think that I was trying to help build and understand coaching while also trying to figure out how I wanted to perhaps do it. Because I think I knew always that I wanted to be a head coach at some point in time. I wasn't sure when that would be. But I think I had to draw on those previous experiences and that influence first, before I could kind of take my own reins, to be honest with you, or even to think, how will I do this someday if I want to, and how far do I want to go along with it? So I'm always completely appreciative of Scott and giving me that chance and for giving me the guidance that I needed to start to become a coach that hopefully is okay, but it really started with him kind of allowing that influence to start to shape that culture around that program and to help me be a part of that as well.
When you get into your experience at Lipsick as an assistant, do you recall any specific instances or events or maybe a chain of events that affirmed for you that you were in the right place and maybe really were the indication that, yeah, the head coaching thing, I know you wanted to do it. Most of us who do want to do it early, but was there a point in time or a set of experiences that made you realize that it was definitely a reality for you, something you'd have the opportunity to do if you just stayed with it?
I think there was one instance. I mean, like we've talked about relationships and stuff. Those kids were, when we had first gotten there, I think they were 1 and 41 the previous 2 years before we had gotten there. And it just fallen on a combination of just, you know, hard times with talent and just a culture that I think within those players in that time wasn't exactly what it wanted to be. And so, to be honest, I think just the year-by-year growth that we saw started to kind of confirm to me. I mean, our first year, I think we won 5 games. I think our second year maybe it was 10, maybe got to a district semifinal. And so maybe just the growth that I saw over that course of time kind of confirmed for me that what we were doing and how we were trying to build it because of the kids and the families that were a part of that kind of was like, okay, I think this is transferable. And so if it's transferable, then I think I know where I'm at. And I'm just going to try to continue to grow and learn. I was at Lipstick for 3 years. I say 3.5. The seniors at that point, one of them still famously, his brother is actually the head coach at Lipstick now, Devin Mangus. His older brother, Derek, was a freshman when we first got there. He told me I left them when they were seniors because I ended up getting a job because, as I said, I started coaching in college. So I was driving back and forth from Toledo to Lipstick every day. And 75 to 613, from Toledo to Lipstick, there and back and forth, every night for most of October through March. That was a lot, I'm going to tell you that. But the kids that were there, those seniors that we were freshmen when we first got there, when I felt the connection with them, and to their dismay, perhaps, that I wasn't necessarily there that last year for them, I tried to bounce back and forth, but I got a job at Van Wert and started teaching and coaching football there and tried to be back for the Lipstick seniors for the basketball season and tried to make it all work, and it was just hard. But those are the instances, honestly, the relationships that we started to develop and the improvement that we saw over the course of time in my time while we were there, and then what they did after I left speaks for itself. But those were the things that affirmed for me that I was in the right, it was in the right mode, I guess.
Yeah, and you said those 3 years. So what would that have been, like the 07-08 season through 09-10?
Yes. Yep. I think so. I'm trying to go back and remember it too. I think I started teaching in 2010.
Okay. So. Yeah. So then you end up at Van Wert. We got just a couple of minutes before we got to take our break. So if you don't mind, I think I'll take it now and then we'll come back and kind of encapsulate your Van Wert experience. But I want to dive into that when you started looking for head coaching opportunities and what you were looking for.
Yep.
All right. We'll take a quick break and be right back. I just want to take a quick second and interrupt the podcast for a minute to remind you that our new platform for the podcast is Spotify for Podcasters. And if you're listening on Spotify, you have an opportunity to make a donation to the podcast if you would be inclined to do so. Thanks for considering any sort of donation. One time, monthly, or other regular donations are certainly welcome. Spotify for Podcasters is our platform, and they're providing an easy option for you to do so just by clicking the link at the end of the episode. Thanks for your consideration. And now back to the podcast. All right, Coach, so you had spent your time in college with your initial coaching experience at Lipstick High School. You know, at this point, from a coaching perspective, you've basically played for or worked for the Ottawa Glandorf coaching tree, I guess is the best way I can put it. When you get your first teaching job and you head to Van Wert, ironically, your first coaching opportunities in football, not basketball, and we can talk a little bit about that, but then when you end up getting an opportunity to coach basketball at Van Wert with Coach Frelick, I'd like you to touch a little bit on maybe what some of the differences were and what maybe different schools of thought or different approaches to coaching maybe that you had seen with Coach Frelick that you could add to what you experienced as an Ottawa Glandorf guy.
Do you think there's a couple differences between the two?
I think there are a few, yeah.
Yeah. It was was a culture shock. I'll be honest. And I think it was probably, I'm not sure if Fro was real. He always teased me. He's like, how can I let an OG guy on my staff? Never in my life would I have ever thought of that. I remember him saying that before. But I just told him, I'm humbly ready to help you. And I promise I don't think about where I came from, please. When I first started teaching, I coached football, and that was a lot of fun. Holy cow, was that a lot of fun. And I coached football, like I said, that first year, I think it was 2010, 2011. And then my wife and I got married in 2011, the August of the following year, 2011. So I took a break from football, got into basketball, and I asked Coach Fro to help, and he didn't really have a position, but Mark Bagley was the assistant coach there forever under Fro, JV coach as well, a Van Wert lifer. He and I had really gotten close, along with Fro, to be honest, too. I mean, with a bunch of Van Wert. There's so many great people over at Van Wert. Bill Clifton, who was my principal at the time, Kemp Smelser, a bunch of great people, great friends that are still coaching there today. Football was great for me because I really, two things that I figured out at Van Wert coaching football and basketball. One, coaching football was the most intense thing I feel like I ever kind of did with athletics. It demanded the most, and I still believe that today. And people that are football coaches or have coached football in the past, I think they would attest to this. We try to be prepared as a basketball program night in and night out. It's different, I think, in comparison to football. I mean, you spend all week, 72 hours. As soon as Friday night's over, by Monday, you have to have the game plan and every single thing ready for your next opponent. And you get 4 days to prep, and then you go have a result there. And it honestly was a 7-day-a-week thing. Back then, we were still doing film. And I think we still had the DVDs that we would exchange in some cases, even back, as recently as 2013.
Right.
Or 2010, that first year. We did have huddle, and I was in charge of the huddle stuff. And uploading the games after the game. I mean, I'm telling you, I slept at the school at least twice because we'd have to be back like Friday night games. You know, we're getting done uploading the film by midnight, talking about the game. We would get together as a staff. That's the one thing that I miss is those after a win, after a football game and a win. Man, that coaching staff in football that we had, there was 9 or 10 dudes that were just, your families were a part of it, and it was so close. That's the one I loved that about football. Everything else kind of became, it wasn't appealing, right? The 7-day-a-week thing, but like those moments where your family was as much a part of it as anything, and the camaraderie of the football coaching staff was awesome. But like I said, I had stayed at the school, and we had to be up at 6 a.m. For film, and then weightlifting, and then we're going to start looking at, as a coaching staff together, the next opponent. And we'd spend all day Saturday looking at them. Sunday we would get together and say, okay, what are we doing? How are we implementing it? And then Monday we'd have to be ready to go and get our stuff in and go. That was, and to that point too, that was the preparation piece. That, not that we didn't prep when I was at Leipzig or even at OG, but I'll be honest, we didn't go over scouting reports when I played at Ottawa Glandorf. I don't remember them. We knew who the players were. You know, if I'm guarding John Diebler, I know what John Diebler is going to do. If I had Kyle Holiday, I know what Kyle Holiday and John Moonshower from Van Wert and Ryan Rainey, Jamar Butler, we knew, but we never really had, like, we prepped, but we never really put the individual emphasis on a written scouting report that I remember, at least.
Yeah.
And so we really didn't, we did that at Leipzig a little bit. Scott and I both, that was one of my jobs as the assistant, is to try to prep for the opponents. So we started to do that, but I'll be honest, my first scouting reports were, he's going right hand, he's a shooter, you know. And honestly, that isn't all bad in my estimation, as I kind of learned. But the preparation piece that football taught me, and then what my experiences were with Coach Bagley and Coach Fro at Van Wert, I mean, you talk about differences between the two. I had never seen scouting reports like this. And I was helping make them in the end with Bags. Our little 5 a.m. sessions for basketball, what it ended up being is I was a high school assistant. I basically helped Bags and helped him practice with stuff. But I basically was helping Bags with game prep stuff. So Bags and I would get in at 5 a.m. We'd start drinking Diet Coke. That's where my habit came from. in the coach's office. Back behind, John, I don't know if you've ever been in the Van Wert, the new school.
Oh, yeah.
In the coach's office in there.
Yep.
Have you ever been in?
Sure have.
We'd be behind in those cages. Behind that cage is where we had that film. And we would record on, like, this little DVD, or it would make a DVD recording, but we could play whatever, and we'd have an aux cord or some sort of video cord straight into that thing, and then we'd just press the button. I remember Bags and I would press the button to record that clip, and then we'd pause it, and then wait for the next time that we saw the next set, press it again. Like, it wasn't the Stone Age stuff. I know that some people still tell me about how things went in the early 90s and 80s and stuff with film and all that stuff, but to me, it felt like, looking back, holy cow. What are we doing? This is kind of crazy stuff. But
I can remember. It's funny you're bringing back memories. I can remember being a head coach at Jackson Center High School in 99, 2000, and 2000, 2001. And I thought we were ahead of the curve. We had what was called a Go video system. We had multiple decks on the same system, so you could operate everything to one TV. But it was exactly what you described. It was playing the game film on one part of the system and then recording that to another one and using that to pause. And so you could make your clips. It wasn't anywhere near as easy as it is today, but it was a lot easier in 99, 2000 when I was trying to do it than it had been prior to that. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Those were some of the, honestly though, that's how Bags and I have become so close and still are today, is we were in there doing those things and you'd have to talk about other stuff. And we just got close, as close could be. And, God, that was fun. And it was a different perspective. I mean, we drew up sets, every single set that a team would run that we could somehow put on film. We put in the scouting report. We had a page long, scouting report, just of personnel tendencies for each player, a general offensive philosophy, defensive philosophy, what we had seen on film. And for me, like, we tried to do images of that at Lipsick, we gave kids 4-page front and back scouting reports. I had never done that before. So it's a credit to those kids at Van Wert. They knew the stuff. I mean, it was crazy. And we would go over it in practice, and that's where I saw that different style of preparation, perhaps, or the differences in preparation. But in reality, though, I mean, offensively, Van Wert has notoriously ran all kinds of sets. You know, mm-hmm. Old Cougar and all the other stuff that they would run, UCLA stuff that we would at Van Wert or at OG, we would know just if there's a sideline entry or if there's a wing entry, we're going to take it away and trap it. But we would just try, like, just to go through all those different sets to see the differences between how one coach prepared who was ultra successful in one way, and another coach who was ultra successful, another Hall of Fame coach, prepare in a different way, and to run those systems differently. It was awesome for me, to be honest. And I've taken what I've really liked from both of those approaches and tried to kind of meld it into what we do kind of now, both at what ended up being Fort Jennings and then Otterville. But even, like, just to wrap up the football and the Van Wert experience a little bit, so I took a break, and then Keith Recker became the head coach at Van Wert for football, who ended up winning a state title, you know, within the last, I guess, well, it was 3 years ago, I think. And so that staff is still as close can be today, too. that was one of the references that I had probably made earlier, but I still had coached football while I was coaching basketball at Vanwert too. So I was coaching football and basketball back-to-back seasons. It was a crazy time, but man, both of those, like Keith Recker's preparation too, was crazy. And he's I still call him one of my best friends today. And just what I learned from him and Fro and Bags during my time at Vanwert was so impactful as far as just adding to what I'd already kind of brought with me from the other people that I referenced earlier, from Scott Magg and Coach Sweet and Coach Turbin, and Coach Schreiner from OG. So those were really formative times for me, and started to develop those visions that I had for what I wanted our program to be later on.
You know, Bags and I have had a ton of conversations over the time that I've known him, and I've not known him for a real long time. I always know who he was, but we met fairly recently. I'm going to say in the last maybe 7 to 8 years that we've really gotten to know each other. And we would talk a lot about how valuable his time under Fro was, because he felt like having a mentor was incredibly valuable, and not a lot of young coaches get that opportunity. And I think he's 1,000% right. However, there's also, Keith, I think some real benefit to what you just described is growing up in one system, experiencing it as a player and as a coach, and then sampling another system, so that when you are preparing to go become a head coach and your first head coaching opportunity is going to come up in that heading into that 13-14 school year, when you've got that opportunity now, you've got a couple of different approaches to draw from, and you really get a great chance to build your own philosophy and piecemeal things together. So talk a little bit about, number one, when you decided that you were definitely ready, and then pursuing that first head coaching job. And I guess, as much as anything, I always think about that first head coaching job, like the decision of how are we going to play? And knowing that you're comfortable with that when you're coming out of two very different experiences like you described.
For one, the resources were built in for that. And I guess I had tried, I think it was 2012 maybe. I think Shawnee had come open. And I guess I had thought that I was ready. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know what I would have been in 12.
What, like, about 25?
26. Yeah, 25, 26. Like, Shawnee came open, and I put my stuff in, and I asked Fro, and I said, Fro, I don't know if I'm ready. I just want to try this. I want to see, and if they like it, I don't know. I might take a chance. And he was a great resource for me. Bags was too, obviously. And of course, I didn't get that job. Parkway came open too. I interviewed for that in the same time frame. I think I was second to Doug, to Coach Hughes, in that process. But I got far enough along that I at least could experiment and see what did people like, what should it look like when you're preparing to kind of take over a program, and how you needed to kind of have everything organized. And like I said, with Keith Recker, he had given me every single thing that he had ever come up with when he first got that band worked out for the football job too. And just what he all had and what he gave Vanwert, and what I tried to compile when I gave Shawnee, Parkway, Fort Jennings, and then even Ottaville later. Just the amount of – it's putting your culture on paper and putting the organization and truly explaining what you want your vision to be. Man, that was hugely valuable. And those experiences when I got, honestly told you're too young and it's not going to work, it was okay, because honestly, I probably needed, and reflectively, I don't know if I was ready to take over when I took over at Fort Jennings in 2013, 2014. But I had gotten to a point where I learned a lot from Fro and Bags, and I wanted to try it. I knew it was back in Putnam County, kind of where I was from. And I knew the people over there. I knew who had kind of led that program forever. I had an immense amount of respect for him and what he had built there, given the limitations that Putnam County schools like Fort Jennings and Ottaville have. and how he was able to kind of build those despite those limitations or kind of barriers at different points in time. But that's kind of how I got kind of into that position in 13, interviewing for Fort Jennings and maybe deciding that I was finally ready to take over a program.
So, you're describing that taking over a program at Fort Jennings, you're talking about John Von Sossen, who was a longtime head coach and had a remarkable level of success. I always, almost always on the pod, ask coaches to describe the program that they inherited or that they stepped into for that first head coaching job. And the challenges maybe of every head coaching job are pretty similar, but there's always something a little unique about every job that you take. And you're talking about a unique situation in that you're going into a program that had a fairly high level of success, was really kind of associated with one guy pretty much for a long time. Were there challenges in that, or was there any part of that you viewed as a I don't know about a hurdle or an obstacle? Was it challenging to take over a program that had been under the leadership of such a long time, well-established head coach?
Oh yeah, there was. What's the adage, right? Like, you don't want to be the one to replace the legend. You want to be the one that replaces
the one
to replace the legend.
Yeah.
And I guess I had taken it over, and John was great in kind of helping to at least get me in there, and to allow me to sort of create my own culture. But the program that I was coming into had fallen on hard times, maybe just within the last 2 to 3 years before I had gotten there. And some of that was just because of the limitations in general. I mean, the sheer numbers. The graduating classes at Fort Jennings and Audeville are around 30 nowadays, sometimes under, sometimes a little bit over. So when you're talking about a graduating class of 30 kids and only half of them are boys, you're talking about 60 boys in your entire high school, maybe, that are even close to the pool that you have. So when I got there, I think there had been some fatigue a little bit with just the lack of numbers, maybe a little bit of a lack of depth in talent. Because when you're out of Jennings or Audeville, you might have one really good class. There might be a couple of classes that only have a couple of players or they have role players, but not anything that can set you apart when they get old enough to be, influences at the varsity level. But it was a program that was obviously steeped in tradition. I still believe it's the last PCL school to win the state title, if I remember correctly off the top of my head.
That sounds right to me.
In 2000. And they had gone through their own, it was kind of their own Hoosiers moment. This was a program, John had run it literally for 30-plus years, had 300 wins when he retired. And in a place like that, that's such an accomplishment. It was daunting coming into it, to be honest. But one of the things that I wanted to do was try to put a staff together that was going to help our kids and help kind of create the culture that I kind of thought and envisioned. And so we started to try to do that while we were there, I guess. And I had great people to help me start to do that. And I still call a lot of them my friends still today.
So what would you have identified as kind of your priorities in coming into that program and establishing yourself and putting your imprint on it and get, you use the word culture, getting your culture created? What did you prioritize as the first things that you knew you had to get done?
I think I'm always going to draw back on creating a vision of what I had played under and coached with and using the Van Wert experience to sort of tweak that into what I kind of felt comfortable with. But I think the biggest tenet, the priority for me was just, we wanted to create a culture of toughness, and we had tough kids. So that was a great starting point. But we wanted to have a collective toughness. We wanted to create a style of play that, honestly, I was probably too stubborn. That's youth, right? you go through the stereotypes. A young coach, he's stubborn in what he wants. My vision was I wanted to play fast. I wanted to pressure everywhere. That was what I knew. That was what I was taught. That was what I played under. It's what I wanted to coach and what I envisioned for – for Fort Jennings, and I really wasn't that willing to adapt early. But I also felt like that was also kind of necessary to start to get that culture of competitiveness and to draw on that competitiveness that was in those kids and the toughness that they had and bring it into a collective whole. And so those are some of the things that we tried to do. And I was stubborn to probably do it. John, you know me, and we'll get into X's and O's and stuff later. I tried to be a bridge between, like, maybe the Van Wert way and the OG way. So we don't have a lot of sets. I say that, and our players would probably tell me that I'm crazy. But we want to run motion. I want to be four out, one in at most. If we have a post player, I want to be five out if I can. And I want to play fast, and those are my things. And I was probably too stubborn with some of that, the vision that I had. I didn't really take a look at the strengths of some of the players that we had, that we kind of had inherited early. I became less rigid as I got older. But some of those tenets are still there today with me. I mean, some of those things we'll get into obviously later with style and whatnot, but some of those things I tried to bring right away. And honestly, we did the one thing that I would say at Jennings, we got better every year. It was a rough first year. I think we were 4-20. I think the following year we had, gosh, we had so much hope. You know, the other, I don't want to say complication, it was a different experience. Nick Von Sassen, who's going to end up being the JV coach now for Fort Jennings, he was a player, and it would be John's grandson. So we had to meld some of that stuff together, too. It was completely unique. And I give those kids and those families so much credit for allowing me to coach them. It was sometimes hard, and I was probably way too hard on them. I think probably they would say that too. But I still feel like our relationships that we had and the ones that I've kept with some of those kids, with a lot of those kids since those days, I guess, sort of to me, reaffirm what I felt like those priorities were when I came in, which is to build that collective toughness, to play with a competitive fire every single time that you walk out on the floor, because you're representing something bigger than yourself. Those were probably the biggest tenets that I had. Those kids bought into that right away. It was style that was really probably my biggest probably deterrent in the early years as far as probably not expanding what I probably could have done better.
Well, and I think what you describe is pretty typical. A young coach comes into a job, has a way that he wants to do things, and he's going to commit to doing that. And the only thing that I feel confident in, I never coached a style that was based around full court pressure and playing the way that you describe. But you can't go halfway into that. That's you can't be a sometimes pressure guy. I mean, if you're going to play pressure basketball, you got to play it all the time. So the growing pain.
I will say that was a culture shock for them when I first got there, because they had just, I mean, because of kind of John's system, a lot of it was 2-3 zone when I came into it, a variations of a 2-3 or 1-2-2 half court. That was kind of what they had gotten into. And I'll be honest, when I came in, I said, we will never be in anything other than something full court, and it's called fist bowl, and you're going to come get them 84 feet from the basket, and you aren't going to stop until you're too tired to continue, and I'm going to find the next one. And that's going to be how we play. It was a bit of a culture shock, to be honest. And so there were growing pains there for sure.
Well, I think those are bound to happen. There's no question about that. And I want to get into, you know, going through those growing pains. But at some point, I think for me, it was a little surprising. Maybe for you, it wasn't. But anytime a guy makes a decision to go from one county school to another county school that are rivals, and you make the decision that you're going to leave Fort Jennings and go to Otterville, I mean, there are other comparisons. I just completed a podcast not long ago with Dre White. He was the coach at Ada. He went to Upper Souda Valley, big rivals. And, you know, one or two other guys have done that. What ultimately, I guess what was the catalyst for you in deciding, because you were building in a very positive direction at Fort Jennings. What was the catalyst to move you from Fort Jennings over to Otterville?
Honestly, it was position. I had taught the entire time while I was at Fort Jennings. I still taught at Van Wert. There was no teaching position at Fort Jennings open. So I was teaching at Van Wert and driving to Fort Jennings. And then my wife and I lived in Delphus, so that was kind of the triangle. The year before my last year at Fort Jennings, there was a position, an English position, that opened at Otterville. I was able to make more money. I was teaching English at Otterville, where I had already been as a student teacher, a place that I was very comfortable with. And so my last year at Fort Jennings, you know, as you said, we were kind of starting to turn a corner. I think we went from 4 to 5 to 8 to maybe 10 wins my last year there or something, and had been in a sectional finals at least the last 3 years. We got whipped, but I mean, we were in there. We were at least seeing the games, and those kids that were going to be seniors that were freshmen when I first got there, well, actually they were 8th graders. They were juniors my last year, and that senior year, we had a lot of hopes. Brandon Wary, who scored 1,000 points for Fort Jennings, was going to be a senior. His classmates, you know, Luke Tremonie and Finn, there was a group of 5 or 6 seniors that had been building to that last year, and then the position came open at Otterville. And honestly, it became just a situation for me where finally to coach and teach at the same place was very, very appealing to me. And that last year at Fort Jennings and having taught at Otterville was a different and pretty unique experience. I'll just tell you that.
I can imagine.
What the two schools feel about each other every once in a while, you know, it was an interesting experience. But when that position came open, I thought it was an opportunity that I couldn't pass up to coach and teach at the same place. So I had to take that, and I felt horrible. And those seniors were, some of them probably are still bitter, still to this day about that decision, honestly. Probably some community members too, to be honest, but it was just something that I had to do given my position over there. It was a hard year that next year, that first year at Otterville, because of those relationships over at Fort Jennings, because they were great people. You know, the administration at Fort Jennings that took a chance on me are still my friends today. Nick Langhouse, Todd Hain, Matt Dubay, those guys, I mean, I'm so close to them still today, because the schools, while they still are rivals, there's a lot of connections there, right?
No doubt. Yes, absolutely.
There's only a mile and a half that separates the two. So they're really not that different when it comes to it, but there's great people in both places. So to leave there for another was hard, and it became a bittersweet year in a lot of ways that first year at Otterville. But what we've done at Otterville since, and the relationships that I've been able to continue to hopefully develop and have with the players and the students at Otterville, I don't know if I would ever trade it. And I think I made that decision knowing that that could be the chance to do that.
And so my natural question is, so as you make the transition to Otterville with all of those different extraneous things that are a part of it, notwithstanding dealing with the emotional things and dealing with the relational things that you have to deal with, as you're making the transition to Otterville, are you going in there with a slightly different approach because of what you learned during your time at Fort Jennings, or are you going to Otterville basically saying, this is how I want to operate and this is what we do, and I'm just transplanting everything I've already been through here over to a new place?
I still came with a set sort of vision, right? Like, I did want to pressure, but I wasn't completely married to always being in full court man no matter what, trapping 84 feet from the basket, doing everything as stubbornly as we did sometimes at Fort Jennings. I had grown a little bit from that, but I knew that the kids that we had coming in, the kids that we had, the seniors that I was inheriting along with the other players that we were inheriting with that class, I knew that we could do some of the things that I really wanted to do and felt comfortable with with modifications, especially offensively. Honestly, those kids were as helpful as anybody. I probably have my own set philosophy defensively that I'm not going to probably deviate a lot from. I still won't today, much to our players' chagrin sometimes. But I felt a little bit more open to asking suggestions from our own players and from our the coaches that I put together at Otterville. Honestly, we kept a lot of the stuff offensively that first year that they were doing the years before with Todd at Otterville. So we tried to kind of bridge that, and it's kind of modified from that since. A lot of those same things are still in there today, offensively and defensively. But I wasn't as stubborn, I didn't think, coming over. But I wanted to make sure that the core tenets of the culture and the identity and the vision for what we were doing was the exact same.
So I'm going to ask you a question. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I think, I don't know, I'm curious. I think maybe other people, when you're making a move between communities that are that close geographically and physically together, did you feel like the kids at Otterville understood culturally what you were going to ask just because they had been competing against your teams? Did you feel like there was maybe an easier way to present what toughness is to you and what the culture looks like for you because those kids had been competing with your team?
I think they knew about it. To be honest, my biggest job when I first got there was just to make sure I wanted to hear from them, really kind of what they wanted their program to be. I was a lot more willing to listen to some of those extraneous things. Again, like I said, the base of what we were going to do was going to be the same from one place to the other. But I think I was very conscious of allowing those seniors especially to have a say in what was going on and how we were going to do it. And I think that's what kind of led eventually the give and take. I don't want to say the give and take, but the openness to suggestions from both sides, while there's still a rigid sort of, we're still going to do this, but I'll like talk to me about this. I'll listen to you here. I think that started, and that's what helped to create that buy-in that we eventually got. And that first year was as I said, it was a struggle because of the relationships thing between the two communities. But that first year, I would go back to that year. We've had six special classes. This is going to be my seventh year. We're going to have a seventh one, too, with great people, great families, great parents, great kids above all else. But that first year was really special because by the end of it, man, it was the first time where we said, I don't want it to be done. I didn't want to be done when we were done, and none of those kids wanted to be done either. And when I felt that and how we got to that point, man, that was really special. And those kids are still special to me today, that first group there, because of it. Because, gosh, we were really good, too. I mean, that was the other caveat. There were six seniors that were great pieces. We had a great freshman class coming in with Josh Turbin, Ryan Siever, and the 10 kids that played basketball in that class that ended up staying their whole time through their senior year. 4 years later, all 10 of them still remained. But that first year, man, it was powerful, I felt like. And that's, I still credit them for building that along with us, our coaching staff, and the community, to build that culture to what it is hopefully today. And how we kind of arrive everywhere that we go and what the vision of our program is.
So I want to talk a little more specifically about that, because obviously you get to Otterville in 17-18. Like you said, you just finished your sixth year. You're getting ready to start your seventh. You've been blessed with talented teams. There's no doubt. I mean, there have been ebbs and flows. There are always going to be in small schools. But because it's Otterville, because it is a school as small as it is, at some point the talent level is going to dip. But you guys – there are certain things that have become non-negotiable that I think the buy-in's been good enough that the effort's always going to be there. The togetherness, I think, is seemingly always going to be there. But you guys have done some things in the last, I don't know, handful of years. Maybe it's the whole time you've been at Otterville that's gotten quite a bit of attention in our area that you guys have like a road. When you play road games, there's a little bit of a tradition that I think I'm going to say unique. If it's not unique, it's damn close. So describe where that comes from and what you guys do.
Honestly, that was we developed that at Fort Jennings. That was where we first did it, and that was one of those negotiations, I guess, kind of at Otterville. I don't want to say negotiations again. It was just kind of a conversation of what I envisioned. One of my assistants, you know, I've had great assistants: Todd Bullinger, Kevin Trentman, Roger Wary, Mark Grown, Neil Whitler at Fort Jennings. That was my staff, along with one of my best friends from high school, Jay Lobenthal, was our JV coach. And he's now a principal at Glandorf Elementary, and he was our JV coach. And honestly, he's the first one that really, I honestly have to credit him. We were talking about how we could be kind of servant leaders, and we were spitballing ideas, and that was an idea. He's like, what else do our JV kids have to do other than stand around and screw around, honestly, after a game waiting for the varsity to come out of the showers? So you know what? Why don't we just let's clean the bleachers. They're not too big, and they're not too above anyone else to help others clean up after a game. After all, our quote is basically leave a place better than where you what you found it, right? So we just started doing that at Fort Jennings. The JV kids knew. I don't know if the parents always were in love with it, the idea of it, and just the visual of it. I don't think our kids honestly were at first all that excited about it either. But it became something where they just knew that's what they were going to do, and dang it, it's going to happen, and you don't fuss about it, just do it and help somebody out. And I think when they saw, and we're not doing it for the thanks, right? Like, several school districts called us and sent letters over our time at Fort Jennings, and those are all great things. But honestly, we talked about to the kids, and when they saw some of those things, I think it helped to reinforce what we were trying to tell them. And I think they didn't care after that. Whether they got the recognition or not, they just wanted to help somebody. So that's kind of one of the tenets of our program and our culture. And we've continued that when I got to Otterville. That's what we do. Our JV kids know, our JV and freshmen that dress, as soon as everybody's kind of out of the stands or kind of dispersed and we go into the locker room, they start cleaning. And they just pick up the trash and find the nearest one, bag it up, pass the maintenance people or whoever's around there for anything, and they just end up taking care of it as much as they possibly can. We do that at home games too now as well to make sure. So it's after every game now that really our kids do that, and they've just bought into it, and they don't do it for the praise that sometimes they get. And I think that's a life lesson, and something that we want to come out of our program is to be a servant leader, and not worry about what it looks like to do something for somebody else, just to do it and have the satisfaction that you did help somebody out, whether you get recognized for it or not.
I think there is a tremendous amount of value in the servant piece is important. There's no doubt, but there's the greatest value is in doing something that doesn't benefit you and doing it whether you feel like it or not. I think that's where the high value really comes in. I think it's remarkable. We could talk about it a lot longer, but I want to get into a couple more things, and we've got about 15 minutes left here. You've talked about your style of play enough. Let me ask you a question. I'm going to put to you a question that I think would be fairly common in this day and age of basketball. If somebody says to you, hey, this is a postseason sport, and postseason success is about half-court execution and defending in the half-court. Teams that win championships aren't extending the floor. They're not playing full court. in this day and age, it's about what you get done in the half court. How do you respond to somebody that says that as a philosophy?
I would say, but I also feel like in postseason, and I feel like at different points, now our talent, like you said, has been immense for the last 6 years. There have been dips, right? I mean, but we've had four players go on to play college basketball at the Division III level or Division II level, and are still playing right now at that level. But I also feel like if that were completely true, then I feel like some people wouldn't be, I don't want to say, looking forward to playing us. I don't think there's a lot of people that look forward to playing us in a sectional final, in a district final, or a district semifinal on a short week. And I'll be honest, we modify in the postseason, to your point. We don't do all of the full court stuff as much. We do it in spots, and we tweak certain things. That's where, you know, we work on some sort of three-quarter court zone pressure that we can still kind of trap in, but we pick our spots maybe a little bit more. I do believe that you can win, and I can give you the examples, you know, of past history where that style has won and gotten to places, and I feel like a couple of shots here and a couple of shots there, I think we could prove that wouldn't be completely true at all. But I feel like style of play, half-court execution, you give me a chance or you give our coaches a chance to figure out what you do and the sets and the different things, we're going to try to take those things away, as everybody does in the postseason. So half-court execution is really important. But if you can get quick, easy buckets and get a 10-point lead in a district final game, man, that's pretty powerful, too, off of five possessions. I guess stylistically, I always believe it doesn't matter whether or not it's full court or otherwise. I guess my style, I want to be full court and play fast and run and get easy shots. But I think the biggest tenet to that, and something that I would probably, you know, say is probably one of the biggest foundational pieces in order to do that, to have the option to do that, is rebounding. And I feel like rebounding may be the most transferable determinant of success offensively and defensively, and it allows you the opportunity to decide what style can win out. And when we've been great rebounding teams, which we have, regardless of size, we've had a lot of special seasons because of it. So I guess I would say I don't need to be a half-court execution team or a half-court defensive team if we do some of those things that I really feel like are the real tenets to success, which to me is rebounding and toughness. So
I just think it's a fascinating conversation. It really is. It seems like in this day and age, everybody that gets a job says, well, we're going to play fast. But most people don't, a lot of people don't press today, but everybody talks about playing fast. And there have been one or two coaches that have gotten hired recently in our area that have had the courage, I think it takes, to say right away, look, we're going to play in the half court. That's what it takes to win in the tournament, and we're going to play in the half court. But you know, I was at Jackson Center for a couple of years in my career in the early 2000s, and Jerry Harmon was our superintendent. He was a real mentor to me, and he said, if you've got talent and you don't press, you're crazy, because it may not win you tournament games, but there's a good chance that it'll allow a team that you're better than to hang around if you don't press them. And he could point to examples from our area, guys that were legendary coaches that never – quite got over the hump in the tournament, and his response was they always lost to a team that wasn't as talented as them because they played in the half court and they walked the ball up the floor, and that other team got to hang around and a really good shooting night got him beat, when if he would have generated 8, 10, 12 more possessions a half, you know, by pressing, his athletes would have won out. So it's just an interesting conversation to have, and I could...
Can I add to that?
Sure, certainly.
It's really... I'm not a huge analytics guy. I like to use analytics that maybe prove my point, okay? So to illustrate this, what you're saying, possessions. It is all about possessions. And if we do have the better players or close to, I want to maximize those possessions, as you were saying, as much as possible. So how do you do that? The thing that we keep track of is really possession differential. It's rebounding differential, offensive and defensive, and turnover differential. So it doesn't matter whether you play fast or play slow or execute the half court or try to get some easy buckets with pressure and playing faster offensively. It's really about possessions. And we've kind of determined, like, if we can have five or more possessions somehow over the course of a game, our likelihood of winning is exponentially higher, given the talent that we've had. So it doesn't matter how you generate those. It really is dependent on how can I get the possessions that will determine a better likelihood for us, given who we have at our disposal. And so I guess that's, I would kind of confirm and affirm what you're saying there. And that's really what we look at. And that's probably why we pressure and trap and do some things, because I'm just trying to get that advantage. Even if it means that we give up a layup here and there, if the benefit over the course of the whole is to our liking, then I guess that's the cost benefit, I suppose. We try to negotiate throughout the game.
I could spend a long time doing it, and we've got about 7 or 8 minutes here, and I wanted to get some of the life component into this. Keith, you and I have talked about a lot of things privately over the last couple of years. Your life has intersected with coaching in some really difficult ways. It's been challenging. Can you talk a little bit about the difficulty or the responsibility that you have and the effort that you have to put into balancing your life outside the gym with this all-consuming profession?
I mean, a lot of coaches, and I mean, my family has bared the brunt of a lot of things. My wife and my kids, I mean, I can't thank them enough. My wife is so humble. She played volleyball in college and was I guess we were high school, started dating when we were seniors in high school and carried it through. So she's been with me through this whole thing. And, you know, the price that she's paid from our relationship standpoint at times and the time that she's kind of surrendered to allow me to pursue some of this stuff is crazy. And now I've got a daughter that's about to be 8 and going into the second grade and a son that's 5. And we're trying to figure some things out with him and make sure that he's on the right track. And amongst all the other stuff, it's been difficult, and I can't, like, my wife is such a rock for doing it. And so many coaches have said that's what allows us, right, to have that experience and to affect, hopefully, people's lives for a positive outside of our own family, is because our family is so strong internally. And she's been that and more for me. She's been my best friend since probably that same year, senior year. So she's amazing. And it's also led, I mean, John, I know, I remember, you know, I'll be honest too, coaching has been something that's kept me going, given my family's struggles at different times. My mom passed away 2 years ago.
Yep.
It came after COVID, like the COVID year, right? Like for everybody, traumatic, right? So it's not anything new. But I'll be honest, like, coaching helped to keep me going. Those kids helped to keep me going. My mom had a stroke, I think, in June. The first stroke was in June. From that point on, I never heard her voice again. And for 9 months, she struggled trying to figure that out amongst all the COVID things. I remember John Turbin, our principal, would let me leave during school because mom needed somebody by the window just to talk to her. And so I just tried to do that because that was all that we could do for so long through that stretch, with so many people have those stories. But like those kids and being able to come back and coach and be around them and the support that they gave me, it's something I'm forever indebted to. And those things, and that's hopefully why family and life and the impact that education and coaching and a game can have for the betterment of so many. It's important, and it's really cool, and it's helped in a lot of ways. So it's been very good for me to be able to have that support and have that outlet, and for my family to allow that outlet to be something.
You know, it's really interesting. We often so much talk about life balance, and I think whenever you hear that term, the work-life balance, the feeling is that people have got to find a way to create more time outside of their career. That's how you create balance. But you make a point here that I think is really worthwhile, is that sometimes when your life is what your life is, and it can become all-consuming, it can become such a grind and a challenge to keep a positive mindset and to always see the big picture. There are times when the career that you have actually is creating the balance. It actually is allowing you to have a part of your life that you can invest in and see the positive in, when maybe those other parts of your life are more challenging than you want them to be. And I just think there's tremendous value in that. You and I talked down at the state tournament a couple years back about some things we were both going through. And the truth of the matter is, if we hadn't had this game and some of the relationships that this game created for us, it probably would have been a hell of a lot harder to get through what we were already struggling with.
For sure.
So listen, I could keep you on here all night, but I really want to respect your time. I told you we'd try to do an hour, and we're pushing an hour and a half right now.
I know.
Listen, we'll get together again sometime, but I just thanks so much again for taking the time. And as you get ready to start your next year, I'm pulling for you, man. Good luck.
Thank you very much, always, my friend. I appreciate you.
Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in and checking this one out. If you're listening on Spotify, courtesy of our platform, Spotify for Podcasters, you have the opportunity to make a donation to the podcast. If you would be inclined to do so, there's a link at the bottom of the episode that will allow you to make your donation in whatever amount you would choose to do so. If you're listening on any other platform, I just ask that you please rate, review, and subscribe, and come back anytime to check out more episodes here on the Basketball and Life Podcast.